Hi, this is Christian Lunger from Motors Design. I'm a service designer and information designer. And hello again to another edition of our podcast, Geraumt Podcast. Today, I'm talking to two very interesting people. Both are part of a very interesting company. It's called Populous. And Populous is a global architecture and design firm, and they are specializing in large-scale public venues. So if you think about what kind of building or venue that could be, what they did is, for example, the sports venue of Tottenham Hotspur Stadium or the Sphere, for example. So if you look at their website, there are really lots of sport venues there, and they're working on them on a global scale. And the people I'm happy to talk about, their kind of projects, especially on the topic of gaming and wayfinding and what we can learn, Ari Lorenzana and Simon Borg. So they have really interesting profiles. So I'm really it's kind of a name-dropping description I'm going to do now, because they really have a broad view on the whole topic. So if we're talking about Ari, she's a creative strategist and an architect. She has more than 10 years multidisciplinary expertise in the field. She focuses heavily on end user and communities. She's navigating kind of the trends for what can be perceived as community value. And I have highlighted something in her profile, which I found personally very interesting, that she's passionately reimagining, as an Austrian, this word is really hard, women's sports experiences, like, for example, the AIG's Women's Open in the world of women's golf. And if we look at Simon, he has a very similar high quality profile. He's a creative director at Populous in London. And it's due to Simon that we're actually doing the podcast, because Markus and I, we saw him at Wayfinding Future Thinking of the Sign Design Society in London. And we were really impressed by his presentation. So I called him and asked if we could do the podcast, and thanks for agreeing that. He's specialized on the topics of brand strategy, wayfinding, partnership activation, and integrating brand identity into spatial experiences. And that's the topic now. So thanks a lot for your time, for doing this podcast with me. We'll basically guide into the first question, which is, what do wayfinding and gaming have in common? And thanks for your time. I'm looking forward to 30 minutes high intense discussion on the topic.
Thank you very much for that great introduction. I think it's important to before we actually answer that question, almost to take a step back. I think the presentation that I did on future thinking of wayfinding a couple of months ago was centralized around the idea of understanding the user. And I think that's key to a lot of the conversation we're going to have today with our projects in Populous, whether it's an architecture project, a design project, whatever it is, we have to understand who the user are. And over the time that I've been working at Populous, the one thing that has changed significantly is user behavior, and being able to understand that and identify how people engage or communicate or interface with a space, a public realm, or an environment has been instrumental in driving some of the work that we've done. And I think when we started to work on this esports arena, we started to look at how the users understand movement and how they understand how they move around a space, an environment, an event. And that took us to the idea of looking at gaming architecture and looking at how people moved around the game, how they followed quests. I think traditionally wayfinding is relatively linear. You're getting somebody from the outside, you know, whether it's from home all the way through to a seat. Within our world, we're talking about events. We're trying to get somebody mm-hmm. from one point to the end point. When we started to look at gaming, it was more of an open world. The ability to be able to navigate, to determine your own, it was choreograph your own experience and not to be constrained to an A to Z system of navigation, but to have a system of different locations, different hubs, the ability to change your experience from one end of the day to the next, to decide what you wanted to do, link very closely with how you might navigate a game. And that led us to think that this is a really good way to start to sort of build a navigation system, a wayfinding system within an esports arena specifically. I think before sort of I hand over to Ari to talk about the detail, the other thing is we're talking about wayfinding here, but what's critical within this whole project is that it was closely linked with architecture as well. So if we were trying to implement this structure of navigation that linked to the gaming world into any building, it wouldn't necessarily work. It wouldn't work as well. But we worked closely with the architectural teams, with the interior teams. So the structure of the building lent itself to allow us to build this navigation system. So it was a design solution on every point of the people within Populous working on it. So the concept and the strategy fed into the overall design solution from wayfinding all the way through to the architecture. Mm-hmm. And I think Ari, do you want to?
Yeah, beautifully put. But I think, Christian, I think the big aha, and gaming has had that revelation also, is from navigation, we've changed into exploration. Mm-hmm. And that is the key ways of interacting with the space to what Simon is saying, is that environmental element, is that architecture element. All of a sudden there's codes within your experience that are telling you either this is a dwelling moment or this is a get out of here moment. There's that awareness of boundaries, there's that awareness of threats or action or temperature rising, getting closer to the key moment through the day, whether if it's your performer coming up or that competition coming up that you've paid your ticket to go to, the reason why you're in the venue. At the same time, it's like very much facing Bowser, and how do the gaming design explains to you this, you need to start getting ready, you need to start getting hyped, this, you're about to be challenged or you're about to be excited. And it's really lovely how those two worlds and how the human awareness has grown through games mm-hmm. having developed into the open world, and how we can learn a lot from how that architecture has been designed, how that game architecture has been designed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you both already mentioned quite some concepts that I'm an avid gamer, by the way, and I like the story-based games a lot. And I kind of resonate when you talk about getting hyped or exploration, because these are the things that really make me start the game. Really,
what are
looking
your favorite
forward
games?
To.
What are your favorite games?
Basically, it's all shooters. And I like one of my most favorite games is actually called Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. Yeah. Because for me, do you know the game?
No, but I've heard of it. Yeah.
The game is great because you wake up in the cellar. And for me, especially as a wayfinder, you kind of explore this old village, and you have to basically do everything that Kevin Lynch wrote in his book, Image of the City. So you remember the ways and the crossroads, and you have to go to certain information. You can see how a map works because you don't know anything. So it's this seldom experience where, as a user, you're in a situation where you don't know anything, and you can see on what you actually use to find your way around, and how it triggers certain movement. As you said, triggering movement, exploration. So that's one. And the other one is Senua's Journey. I like that one because it has this combination of telling people how a physical illness works. And it has such a nice game design. to really bring over the message that this, what this illness is all about, all integrated into a game, and the whole process, how they did the game, is just great. So those are my favorites. What are your favorites? Do you have favorite?
When I'm a sucker, I was born in the Mario Kart era, having an older brother that was everything that we could have. Yeah, so obviously I love Mario Kart because it showed me as a very younger person playing. I could mm-hmm. actually still catch up. So I think I'm a very accessible game person. So I loved how games kind of change the rules based on your ability in order to get you to participate. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a lot that we bring towards our design. Obviously, massive Pokemon era. So you can only imagine that the amount of hours of storytelling that I've consumed yes. from the world of Pokemon, and that very much awareness of story, human responsibility, that accountability that you get as a gamer when you're understanding what you need to be, what you need to do, and how responsible you are about, to your point, learning how you navigate the world of Pokemon. And lately, Zelda, obviously Breath of the Wild.
Oh yeah, Zelda
blew uh-huh. my mind, and that kind of, it was a very parallel moment for us when Zelda mm-hmm. had been become deconstructed by the gaming community, and everyone started to understand what were the codes that were mm-hmm. influential and why it was such a relevant project. Obviously, parallel was Horizon and incredible games, but Zelda was the friendly version of that open world. And that's when this project that we're very happy to talk to you about is stemmed from. That, mm-hmm. that awareness of the Zelda moment, Zelda Breath of the Wild specifically.
Yeah.
Simon, what about your Pac-Man era?
I would like to say I played all of those. I think Gran Turismo was probably the last time I properly mm-hmm. engaged with anything. But yeah, it was fairly limited. But I didn't realize Pokemon was so in-depth.
God. A whole pillar anyway. Of my life.
Yeah.
For me, it was Space Invaders. That was my beginning during school.
Okay. Yeah. Well, same.
Lots of coins yeah. went into this slot machine.
yeah. Before school, after school. Yeah, I did the same.
So if we look at those games, just to look a little bit at the element, because that was something that I realized when you did the presentation as well, this a very taking the zoning system from the gaming, like what you said, there is an introduction phase, then there is a tutorial, and then you kind of go to different kind of, let's call them quest zones. How did you transfer Learn. This kind of concept into your spatial experiences?
Well, I think if you reflect on a traditional journey, I think we all want people to explore the venue. There's a mm-hmm. there's a pragmatic approach. You need to get people from one point to another point for their primary function, but we also hope that they're going to explore and engage with the rest of the building. But generally, it's limited within a confines of a certain area. What we wanted to do here is truly overlay that idea of quests and adventures and the ability mm-hmm. to move fully around the building, and for those experiences to change, and to provide beacons or high points within the venue that people could head towards. So I think going back to the conversation or the point I made previously about the architecture being critical, a critical part of this. Without the architecture and actually being able to have these physical hubs that people could move between, this wouldn't be as strong as it is. But then as far as how we communicated that, it was making sure that we had variable communication, variable messaging. So once you entered the building, you're in the lobby of the building or the birthplace of the story, and it's being communicated to you what is going to happen on that day. Then from that point on, you're interfacing with the building. So the building is talking to you. The building is telling you things, and mm-hmm. it's encouraging you to move around. It's still, we're not losing sight of the fact that there is a primary function of this building where people are going to watch an e-games event where they need to get to. But outside of that, it's secondary, but very close to the primary experience. So we try to build in a secondary experience, which is so fundamental to the overall day, because people spend the whole day there, and this is time out of their entertainment budget, or this part of their entertainment calendar, that we wanted to make every part of their journey as integral as being within the seating bowl itself, watching the event that they've primarily come to see. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that this venue is built for esports, and the various game types that come in needed to be represented. So the type of experience that you have is going to be different from FIFA to Call of Duty or whatever, or Fortnite. So the ability for those experiences within each of those areas that we've developed to change accordingly was also important. There was no ability to have a sort of one size fits all to create this digital environment that talked to everybody at all times. We needed it to be able to adapt to each of these games when they took over the venue, and it becomes something different for each.
If we look at the situation of the users, yeah. In different, I don't know if there is like a, if you can generalize, yes. Or if you have to specify for specific venues. In my research, I came across the Bartel model. And yeah. Of course, there is several types, but the ones that I find interesting are the socializers and the, let's call them explorers or adventurers. Do they actually play a role in how you categorize or your users within those sports venues? Or do you get your data from somewhere else and have different kind of profiles that you cater for and plan for?
I think your model, the Bartel model, is a bit too specific to the action mm-hmm. person, that the person that is like the active participant. Mm-hmm. And we have to be careful whenever we're designing venues that there's a plus one or there's a plus three that are not necessarily as active or physically able to, or just they don't want to really participate the same way. So there's a little bit of watching, people watching and just socializing. To your point of those are very interesting. We didn't really take on the Bartel because we thought it was maybe a bit very, very granular, and we mm-hmm. needed to design a code of experiential considerations or touch points mm-hmm. that were relevant to the architecture. So mm-hmm. in a way, if I tell you a little bit more, we kind of deconstructed the open world. We did, it is embedded within the Populous way of working. We speak with experts. We spoke to someone that actually designs games. So he nowadays works in guerrilla games. So mm-hmm. pretty big established game developer. He broke down the open world gaming architecture. And then yes. alongside what we overlaid was the hero's journey.
Yes.
From Joseph Campbell, which you would know very, very well. But we've always understood the highs and lows of the day at the venue, like mm-hmm. how that goes and how do we manage like to create that element of anticipation, excitement, and just explosion that needs to be happening when you're at the bowl, like when you're already watching the event. So the element of the user, as I think Bartel has an element of like the killers, the achievers, yes. or socializers, that we maybe generalize it a little bit more, where we go active or passive, mm-hmm. where we go extroverts, introverts.
Yes.
And our goal is very much about making it as pleasant as possible to everyone. So we cannot really go into just the active user. I think Simon was referring to it. The challenge, if you think about it, is that maybe the Bartel model responds to being the active user, but sometimes in these venues, you could go, there would be FIFA fans, like people that play FIFA, the old FIFA game, or like mm-hmm. Mario Kart. To all of those, we also have to provide a cohesive experience, right? So we didn't dwell into that behavioral pattern as much as maybe you could go into, because we found it very, very granular.
From regarding getting satisfaction from certain elements of the space,
Yeah.
Since you talked about those who play, I'd say it's the competitiveness. So
exactly, we didn't make it. We didn't make. We didn't make it competitive in a way against. We just knew that there will be a gaming element, and that will be where the competitiveness will thrive. But what we did, on the other hand, we just translated the architecture in codes that gamers would understand.
Yes.
If I can give you a bit of an example, but specifically this one venue that we designed, we knew that we had four towers in a sense, okay? Mm-hmm. Key towers that we considered as landmarks. Mm-hmm. So we were like, okay, it's really easy for us to navigate from tower to tower. People would know that there's a new sector to discover. So we understood we had to get people from tower to tower, and we needed to give them a reason why to explore. So we gave each of those towers a different identity. Mm-hmm. And we started looking at foursomes, so themes of storytelling in games that are foursomes. So we looked at elements, obviously your fire, water, air, earth, resulted really, really well. And we knew that anyone that has ever played anything, there is a fire part of the game, there is a water part of the game, like anything that is like a journey, hero's journey, adventures, they kind of create those mini sectors mm-hmm. through the experience of the game. So we thought those were really key themes on how we could link up, for example, the F&B experience. So your food, where do you want your food? You want your food in a very social space where it just feels like warm and welcoming and relaxing. So that was all of a sudden our fire space, like our fire sector, our fire mm-hmm. tower. And why, obviously, your food next to the campfire, you cook your food with fire. I just felt really that is in the gamer's mind where you would be topping up your energy and relaxing and mm-hmm. just kind of just not being so active. But then there was an element of air, and the air, what is air? Air is when you're really visionary, when you're like, you're just falling in love with things and new products and new explorations. So that was more the museum element or the retail, or like this mm-hmm. this way of getting you to the shopping experience in ways that it makes you super engaged and falling in love with the product. And in that way, we also thought of water as the after competition. So there will be a competition hub, like where there would be obviously your stations where you're competing at. This is for an esports arena. I'm not, mm-hmm. I haven't said it before, but like obviously it's kind of coming across in the message, but like for an esports arena, you do design competition or competitive socializing spots. So what happens after? How do we get people to transition into normal life once they've been really hyped from the playing the game or playing into that competition? So we took them through the water sector, which was rinsing, it was cleansing, it was visually cleaning like your eyes and just kind of going back to a sensory element. The humidity changed mm-hmm. and that way the user and the community starts becoming more social and more back into their own bodies, not into their avatar bodies that they had inhabited a minute ago when they were competing in the competition hub. So that is the way that we went about it. Because if you go into Barto, like I think it's very much about the engagement, of the active engagement with the game. So mm-hmm.
you mentioned one element, because I knew it from the very beginning. I knew how long, I don't know how long we will be able to talk, but it will be too short. And we already... getting close to the end of the podcast. Too early, really, is my emotional and functional feedback. So Simon, there was one element I really would like to talk before we finish the podcast. Sure. Ari mentioned landmarks, which brings me directly to the navigation aspect. And the thing you showed us during your presentation, trying to achieve, let's say, a signless wayfinding system, and you managed again how you use architecture, light. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because there are gaming principles, of course, as well, like, you know, big pylons of light that you go towards, because like towards a landmark. What are your thoughts on on what we can learn from for navigation from gaming.
I mean, on the project that you're referring to, that project was so groundbreaking that everything within the venue needs to be rethought. So whatever it was, whether it's a seat within the auditorium, whether it's a lighting system, whether it was the customer service that you got. So wayfinding was definitely a component that we needed to rethink. And our approach really looked at the venue itself was talking to you. So the venue had a consciousness. And the idea was that at every point as you approached, it would draw you in. So rather than having several signs, it would be able to draw you into some light, whether it's a color. I think it was yellow, green, and blue. And mm-hmm. you would be your app or your ticket or whatever would say go to the red light or go to the blue light, and you would move, and you move within the building itself.
Simon, but like just to describe to describe the project really quickly for anyone that's listening and is not doesn't have a visual reference of the sphere. This is a ginormous bulb of light that is a beautiful sphere, a spherical building that just emanates that light, and that light mm-hmm. obviously that LED screen that is spherical is has different contents. So obviously there's a glowing feeling to it. Mm-hmm. So Simon is talking about a venue that had magnetism, because when you look at the sphere, which is, you can all Google it, is in Las Vegas and is the first of many, mm-hmm. but it is a visionary project where is that humongous scale, but that perfectness of the sphere that has never been seen before. So we already knew, and we had to educate ourselves and the architecture team the same, on how would a person react to that feeling and that aura that the venue was going to carry. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of pre-planning around it. So to Simon's point on the wayfinding, everything, even all the way to up the seating design, had to be rethought, because mm-hmm. we knew that emotionally we were going to get people at a space or at a setup that they had never experienced before.
And I think in contrast to the esports venue, this was as you know, this is a venue that is for everybody. So you'll have everybody visiting from all walks of life. So although we were looking at sort of next generation sort of thinking with regards to navigation and wayfinding, which as you said is very similar to some of the triggers and nuances that you'll get within gaming, it had to be understandable to all. So it wasn't designed from a presupposed point of view that these people knew how to navigate an e-gaming environment. This was for the general public, but mm-hmm. It still needed to be a new consideration of how to move around. I mean, there were points where there were signs to confirm that you've arrived at where you needed to get to, but the broad gestures of navigation, of drawing you in, sort of this gravitation towards where you needed to go, was all part of this central concept. Again, this wouldn't have worked in a highly complex building where you had lots of different directions, but this was designed in conjunction again with the architectural team, with the interiors team, to make sure that linear journey was as consistent, as clear as possible, so these concepts can work when in conjunction with good design all the way through.
Mm-hmm. I'm for me it's great to talk to the both of you, because you're coming from the architecture side and basically embrace the let's say the as one element the graphic design elements of wayfinding, because that's basically what all those of us who take this topic seriously preach all the time, that architecture and graphic and branding should be like working together. And I think so too. For me it's really one of the good things. If I look at games, I never use a directional sign within the game. So to achieve a surrounding where you can reduce signs and still make people feel safe and finding their way and finding their target, I think that's a big goal for each project. And I agree, the more complex it gets, the more you have to use different kind of means and especially like directional signs.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of our observations of working in this sort of sector of work, whether it's, you know, an event-based building, whether it's a stadium or an arena, is that when people come, they're normally often coming for the first time, and all they see is the venue. They look past mm-hmm. the signs. They just see this amazing architectural structure. And being able to connect that initial response to the building and how you need to navigate it is really clear. So basically seeing where you need to go rather than being pointed where you need to go, and finding ways to trigger that response with all our venues, albeit the two that we've spoken about today are the ones that are really sort of pushing the limits of how that can and should work, is really our goal with everything that we do.
Ari, do you want to have some final parting words?
I think that as you both completely understand this methodology, but like, is these wanting designers and creative industries to keep on thinking that way, that like widening and becoming broader. And I think anything that kind of makes us link better to those communities that we speak to, from the general audience that has never been to the venue and they just fall in love with it and we just need to make it as comfortable and straightforward as possible, to the ones that are surprised by the fact that they've hung out for 4 years, so for 4 hours, sorry, in their space, and just how much the collaboration of those communities expressing what they want, how they like their spaces, how they feel like it talks to them, is really important. And I'm very happy to kind of keep on participating in this type of stuff that just prioritizes new ways of connecting to people.
It's great that the three of us really like what they're doing, because we're spending so much time with it. So
yeah, sure.
I thank you a lot for your time, just for the listeners. As always, if you have questions, recommendations, it's our email. It's podcast@geraumt.com. And Ari, Simon, thanks a lot for your time. We nearly had a point landing. It was very interesting. I see it as a game now. I kind of, maybe I can see this podcast now as having finished the first level. Let's go to the next one. Thanks a lot for your time. I'm looking forward to see more of your great work, and enjoy your time in this, I think, great business.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.